Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns and this is my show for, I suppose, people who are now emerging from lockdown and getting back into the outdoors. As any of you who've read my blogs or seen my tweets will know, I'm very much into exploring the use of a heated hot tent right now as a way of exploring the Highlands. And I'm really finding it opening up new doors for me in terms of exploring places that I thought I knew well, but I discovered there are different aspects to it. And also, but one of the barriers maybe to using a hot tent is these things are not light. The hot tents come in about around about 16 kilograms. You know, you're not going to put them in the bottom of your rucksack. And they come with a, if it's a hot tent, it also comes with a stove, which weighs about the same and probably more. So they're not exactly backpackable. And I'm also exploring ways that you can move them around. So my guest today runs a company that I think is pretty well unique in the British Isles. Scott Mountain Holidays combines using hot tents to give you that sort of comfort and sort of luxurious feeling of being in a hot tent, but also uses ponies to move them around. I think that's a really interesting combination. So if I can introduce to today Andy Bateman. How are you, Andy?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I'm great. So how did you get into the outdoors? What brought you to Scotland?
I came up here with my father back in 1986, I think the year was. We took several days to get up here because he had to visit every good beer pub along the way. But we ended up in Torridon, and I was blown away by the scenery, really. And I just sort of vowed to myself that I wanted to spend some of my lifetime up in Scotland. So, it was a long-term aim. And then having had a very brief spell in the mining industry, I then decided this is what I wanted to do, be involved in the outdoors. And in 1998, around about that time, a guy I knew in my mountaineering club down south was interested in investing in a property. And he said, how about you run it for us? And his business partner came into the fray. And anyway, to cut a long story short, it didn't really work out for them financially. And after 2.5 years, we bought them out and we haven't looked back, really.
So you started out as you're an outdoor pursuits instructor. Is that where your background?
Yeah. I mean, I basically lived at home with my folks, kept my overheads down, and got my mountaineering, some of my hill walking and mountaineering qualifications. Then the opportunity came up, as I said, and we went on from there.
Oh, right. Okay. And so when did the idea of using 10 teepee tents that you use, the same as I use. When did the idea of using them and working with ponies come from? Where did that idea develop?
Right. Well, that was sort of quite a bit later. And we had a couple of holidays in France touring with a donkey. Our son Gregor was about 7 at the time, so we were looking for something adventurous but that would suit him. And we had a client who had mentioned about this touring with a donkey and carrying all your camping equipment. We couldn't go in the height of the summer because obviously we're busy then, so we went in October time, and you could go from accommodation to accommodation and the donkey would carry your baggage. And I just thought it was just a wonderful way to travel, really. You know, mm-hmm. You've got this lovely travel companion. It's all on foot, of course, walking through the most rural parts of France. You know, it was just lovely.
Yeah, I mean, I've encountered mule trains in the Alps carrying supplies up to alpine huts. It seems to be quite a long tradition of that. My experience of mule trains is that they have one speed.
Yes, and keep well out of the way.
That's right. They're not going to. So, did you know much about ponies when you started then?
No, nothing at all. I was basically. Bearing in mind that a donkey can carry up to about 40 kilograms, I was in conversation with Rory Ormiston, who owns Highland ponies in the area. And I said, well, how much does a Highland pony carry? And he said, well, for the big ones, up to 16 kilograms, you know, which, 16 stone.
16
which
stone?
Is about 100, 16 stone, which is about 100 kilograms, you see.
Right, right.
And I just thought, wow. Now, you know, you could now start to put these, you know, heavier tents and the wood burning stoves on the back of a pony. And of course, they're a most wonderful 4x4 vehicle. You know, you can go anywhere with them, really. And, you know, it would open up the remotest parts of Scotland. I mean, you've probably been the same yourself. You sort of maybe been on a hill walk and you've dropped down into an area and you think, oh, this would be a lovely place to camp,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it's getting there. And certainly with this heavier stuff. So,
yes.
It was just sort of putting two and two together and, you know, doing the calculations in your head on the back of a fag packet, so to speak, you know.
What attracted you then to the 10 teepee equipment then?
It just worked very well, you know. I've gone for the Sapphire 9 and it's got enough room for, you know, to have the stove in the center as the focal point. You've then got, you know, enough space to sit around it. Up in the top, you've got your drying area, which is of course very important in Scotland.
Yes.
And then around the edges you can store your gear and your bedding, and it just you know, was just a very efficient use of space. One of my main concerns with regards to Scotland when I was looking at the various types of tent or structures was how would they fare in high winds.
Yeah.
And then teepees are extremely stable and shed the wind very effectively. And they're just extremely well built, as you probably know yourself.
They're incredibly robust. There's no two ways about that.
Yeah.
And I like you, I find as a, how can I put it? I find a sort of atmospheric quality in them. You know, when you're in a nylon tent, it feels like a kind of modern tent. But if you sit in a 10 teepee canvas model, you could almost be 100 years ago.
Yeah. And you know, just from the practicality of it, you know, because it's a polycotton, it's breathable.
Yes.
And that breathability combined with the heat of the stove is an absolute game changer. It really is, you know.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of people, and this is where, you know, this sort of idea came into being, in as much there's a lot of people out there who like the idea of wild camping. And, you know, wild camping can be a glorious experience in Scotland if you get the weather. But there's a lot of people out there who will draw the line at having to put on damp gear in the morning and, you know, not having to, you know, have a shower or clean up at the end of the day. You know, there's a lot of deal breakers out there in terms of wild camping for a lot of people. And, you know, I just thought there's, you know, people like the idea and there's people out there who will pay extra for the extra comfort.
Yeah. I think it's how can I put it? I suppose if you're used to lightweight camping, then I suppose you sort of the discomfort at times goes along with that, and you're prepared to put up with that. But if you're being introduced to the outdoors, the trials and tribulations of lightweight camping can be a bit off-putting.
Especially for youngsters as well, you know. They haven't got the same sort of body mass, and they'll get, you know, chilled quite quickly. So, you know, having somewhere to where you can retreat to, dry your gear out and be warm is a massive difference, you know. I mean, I've always come from a mountaineering club background, and to me, the hill day doesn't finish with coming off the hill. It's about, you know, the being in the pub at the end of the day, sharing a meal together, chatting and that sort of thing. And I found when I have done lightweight camping trips, you know, you sort of have your evening meal and everyone's disappeared off, and where they've gone, they've all gone to bed, because the only warm place of comfort is their sleeping bag, you know, and that's the evening over with. It's lovely with this combination to have that social element at the end of the day outdoors, you know.
Well, that's very true. And I think particularly in the winter in Scotland, obviously, one of the things that put me off sort of lightweight camping was the sheer length of the night. I mean, in a lightweight tent, you're in that tent for what, 12, 14 hours. It's a long time. Whereas what I'm finding with the Tentepi tents is that you know, you can sit in comfort. You can have your light on your stove. You can sit and read. You can do whatever you can talk to folk. You know, it's a different experience, really.
It's a very comfortable situation, hospitable situation, you know, compared with being in a lightweight tent, you know, it's very difficult. We have to admit that we do live in a pretty damp environment up here in Scotland in one way or the
do.
Other.
We do.
And you can't, it's very difficult to manage that dampness. You know, you find
yes, it is. It
camping,
is.
Or you know, even if it hasn't got wet, it gets damp, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I had a, you know, trip to Neudart and, you know, it was about 2 degrees with wet snow coming out of the sky. And we had an inside temperature of about 25 degrees. And that is no exaggeration. You can get really toasty. Obviously, when the fire dies down, the temperature can drop quite quickly, but then you're in your sleeping bag. But it provides a very hospitable environment.
Well, one of the things that obviously I came to hot tenting really actually as a substitute through COVID-19 for bothying. But what I'm finding is actually the hot tenting has a lot of advantages over bothying. Like you're saying, you know, one of the things about a bothy is if you light the fire, but it can take an hour, 2 hours for the place to warm up, whereas a hot tent is pretty much warm almost instantly.
It's amazing how warm it gets. You know, once the fire, you know, within 15, 20 minutes of, you know, putting a match to the fire.
That's right.
It can be really, really warm. You know, in fact, you know, I take stove fans with me, so you know, you get a more even temperature within
tent. Yeah.
And you know, within 5 minutes of putting a match there, that fan's turning. You know.
Oh no, it's just for people who've not experienced it, that basically the tent temperature is like a bell tent. It's a conical tent, and the wood burning stove sits in the center. They're like cylindrical metal boxes essentially, and they have a chimney that goes straight up out of the center of the tent. So I find it in some ways it's like going back to if you can imagine. I imagine the guys who took part in the gold rush in Canada and the States and the Rocky Mountains. That's the kind of thing they did. They had their mules, they had their tents, they had their stoves. So we're actually going back to, in fact, beyond that, really. Obviously, it came from, I think it's the Safi people, I think. I'm not quite sure about that, but it's certainly the nomadic people in Europe.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. Well, I think also we in the UK, our outdoor gear is heavily influenced by the American market. Mm. You know, if you go across to Scandinavia, where they've got, you know, sledges that they can pull their gear on, or they go out on snowmobiles, weight isn't so much of a consideration.
Right. Right.
You know, and you can see this in some of the outdoor gear that they've developed over there. You know, a lot of the sort of American outdoor market is going to much drier, more arid areas in the States. And it doesn't quite fit perfectly with what we find in Scotland. You know, we are a lot closer to Scandinavia in terms of environment.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. So what was it like? I mean, I don't really know one head. Well, I probably do know one end of a horse from the other, but that's about as far as it goes. You know, I know which end you put carrots into and the end that you avoid. So I just wondered what was that like? What was that kind of experience like? Because it must have been like having to learn a whole new set of skills.
Oh, yeah. I had no horse experience until I started this at all. And the lady at Strathspey Highland Ponies on Rothie Murchie's estate, Fiona Lang, has very kindly taken me under her wing because, you know, it's the pony welfare aspect is very important. You know, if you don't have happy ponies, you don't have safe ponies. And it's as simple as that.
Well, tell us a bit about the pony welfare, because obviously, you know, you're asking these animals to carry a fair bit of weight in rough terrain and that sort of stuff. And I guess at times in weather that can be pretty inclement. So what do you have to do to look after a pony under those circumstances?
Well, one of the sort of golden rules is that you start with a native breed. You know, these animals have hundreds, if not thousands, of years of breeding in them. And, you know, even a Highland pony that has been reared in the East Highlands and then is taken across the West Highlands will have to adapt itself, you know, to the wetter climate over there. Obviously they use the Highland ponies to bring the stags off the hill when they're culling the deer.
Are these the same breed, if you don't mind me asking you?
Exactly the same breed, yeah. They're renowned for being very sure-footed, you know, on steep terrain.
Right. So these are they call them Garrans, is that right? These are the...
That's an old name for a big Highland pony, yes.
Okay.
The breed is the Highland pony, yeah.
Okay.
There are three native breeds to Scotland. Highland pony is one of them, yeah. I've had to learn all about the sort of horse packing side of things. It's something that's quite big in the US and Canada, and has never disappeared from those parts of the world. But obviously, they had pack horses that were used in the UK a lot, especially for carrying materials. I've had to import all the gear from Canada. We use the custom rig packing saddles, which are regarded as the finest in terms of, you know, pack saddles.
So just tell me a little about those. But they're specialist saddles for taking equipment, are they?
Yeah. These custom pack rigging ones, the bars. So you basically have this very thick, dense pack saddle pad.
It's
inch deep of felted wool. Obviously, wool is, you know, a natural substance, the same protein as hair on a pony. So, it fits well there. And then you have these bars which run along either side of the spine of the horse and then arches going over the spine, which, you know, protect the spine. They connect the two, but they connect the bars. So
deeper end.
And then off the arches hang the bags. There's quite a lot to it. The bags have to be very finely balanced around the point, no more than 0.1% difference in weight.
That's very fine then, isn't it? That's really,
you're carrying sort of, I will tend to put around about 10 stones on my ponies. I'm a lightweight adult. In the riding world, you don't go above 20% of the pony's body weight.
Right.
And it's, when you're packing, it's only 15% because you're carrying it as a dead weight. Obviously a rider is far more dynamic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And then on top, the bags hang off the pack saddle. And then you have a top load that goes across. And then over that, you then put there's this lashing with ropes. And I sort of it's the double diamond hitch that I use. There's a whole load of different hitches that have developed over time, over hundreds of years. But I've sort of modified the double diamond hitch to make it into a triple diamond hitch. And this just secures the whole load on the pony. So it's all sort of behaving as one load rather than three separate bags, you know.
And what's it like sort of trekking with a pony? Is it very different? I mean do they enjoy it, do you think?
It provides valuable exercise for them. I mean one of the big welfare issues with ponies at the moment is a lot of them becoming overweight because they're not being exercised enough. Bit of confusion out there. People tend to think that they're wild animals. They're not wild animals. Many of the horses' distant ancestors have come from arid and semi-arid areas where they have to cover huge mileage to get enough fodder. They may be only returning to water every 5 days, up to every 5 days. And, you know, just sticking them in a lush green field in Blighty doesn't equate to that. And also a lot of these breeds, they've all been bred as workhorses. You know, they would have pulled plows, they would have hauled carts in the past. You know, you need, they need exercise. If they don't get exercise, they get overweight, there's greater wear and tear on the joints, they can develop the equine equivalent of diabetes, all things that you see in humans if you don't exercise enough, you know.
They get fed up, basically.
And I mean, just, you know, they're nomadic beings a bit, really, as we are also.
Right,
you don't have to go that far back in our evolution to find that we were nomadic. You know, moving on to find pastures new. It's a lovely experience traveling with them, really.
And you get down to develop a relationship with them, presumably you do. They get to know you.
I mean, they're not stupid, the Highland ponies. They'll, you know, if they're in discomfort, they don't like something, they'll let you know. And they'll also push the boundaries a bit as well. So you do have to be on top of your game, you know. It's sort of, it's like dealing with a seven-year-old sometimes, you know. I mean, they also vary between each individual as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their own characters. Some are more dominant than others. You know, obviously they have a very strong instinct as well to be able to survive up in the Highlands, you know, Highland environment, you know. So, you need to make sure they know who's boss, because they will win hands down every time in terms of strength. They do. Yeah, they like regularity, you know.
And what about at night? I mean, do you have to feed them, or do they just eat grass, or how does that work?
Well, I mean, the Highland pony has evolved to make do with what the Highlands provide. Actually putting them in a lush green field is not great necessarily for Highland ponies. You know, they put on too much weight. You would put a cow in a more lusher field than you would put horses.
Right.
I mean, you can see what some of their distant ancestors eat in these arid areas. It's unbelievably tough grass. That is why, you know, a lot of the ponies you will, for instance, in the Lake District, you will find up on the fells, on the grazing that you put other livestock on. They can eat heather and the grass and what the local environment provides. I mean, obviously, at certain times of the year, if we're going out in the autumn, take some nuts with us at least, some haylage. You do need to be aware of how much they're eating and how much they're drinking, of course, but you know, the Highland pony is very well adapted to the Highland environment.
That sounds pretty good for them. They're basically walking through a place with food all around them.
Self-fueling, you know.
That's exactly the phrase, self-fueling. That sounds pretty good. So it sounds really interesting, and I think it sounds a way of exploring the Highlands that we've not done for a long time. So I think it sounds a fascinating thing. How do you find people react to being out on the hill with the ponies and in the tents? How do people enjoy it?
Oh, they love it. You know, I think it's, you know, I do a 3-day trip, so we walk out, set the camp up, and the horses stay with the tents during the day with a handler, and then we go out and do a hill walk and come back to the tents, and it's just a lovely environment. I was doing a press trip for a magazine, and it was just in April time when we had some very nice but chilly weather. And it was just lovely to come down, line the grass at the end of the day in this, you know, very natural environment. We've got a camping spot in where there's regenerating pines and what have you. Mm-hmm. You know, it couldn't be a more natural setting in the Highlands. People love the idea straight off. You know, you know, there's a lot of people who are attracted to the idea of the ponies. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it sounds great. And you don't have to carry your own gear, which is a, has to be a major plus. Well, that's
I mean, you know, especially if you've got young families, you know, the youngsters aren't necessarily physically up to carrying heavy sacks.
Yes, well, that's a good point, because it allows people who perhaps wouldn't normally be able to do that to enjoy something that sounds to work. I suppose it's not a bit of a cliche, but it's almost in harmony with nature what you're doing, really.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. You know, it gives them a lovely experience of the joys of wild camping, you know. So it makes this hot tenting makes wild camping a commercially viable throughout the year.
Yes, that's right. I know what you mean. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And enjoyable throughout the year. People don't mind, you know, getting wet and damp during the day, but they want to get, you know, retreat to somewhere warm and dry where they can, you know, reset and get everything dried out for the following day.
That for me is where I think that's the big thing for me about hot tents, is that it is essentially an all year round experience. It's something that you know, the weather does not, you adapt to the weather, really. It doesn't put you off.
I mean, it's just a lovely experience to sort of hear the elements battering the outside of the tent, and you're in there in 25 degrees of heat, you know, in t-shirts.
Absolutely, and, absolutely. Yeah. I remember the first time I used a hot tent, and I was sitting inside it and sitting by the fire, and I decided to go out and get something out of the car, and to my amazement, the temperature plummeted outside and the whole place was frozen solid, and I had no idea. That has to tell you how good they are. Anyway, Andy, it's been a fascinating talking to you. I think that's a really interesting way of exploring the wild places of Scotland and doing something very, very different. So I wish you all the best with your projects. Thanks very much.
Right, thank you very much, John. Thank you.
Well, that was Andy Bateman talking about his combination of, I suppose, pony trekking and hot tenting, really. If you are inspired to take part in one of Andy's expeditions, then I'll put a wee link to Scott Mountain Holidays on the page for this podcast. And I think it sounds a fascinating thing to do. I'm currently writing my hot tent book at the moment, which I've written about my adventures in bothies and youth hostels and just about everywhere else, really. So I thought I'd write about it. It's sort of halfway between a little memoir and a sort of guide, a how-to guide to hot tenting. And obviously, you know, if you've not read my other four books, The Last Hill Walker, Bothy Tales, Sky Dance, and Wild Winter. Well, what have you been doing? Hope you've enjoyed a little show, and I hope you'll listen again. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.